Good goddamn and hello, fuckos. Welcome to Gem Hunt, our family horror podcast where we, the dirtiest of dirt dogs, select a horror film with less than 5,000 votes on the old internet movie machine data dingle. We watch that son of a bitch and we vote on whether we think it's a horror gem or a pile of shit. My name is Cody and I drunkenly beat the shit out of all of my servants and now I ain't got any more servants.
Who's going to bring him his tea?
I don't know. I'm Buggy and I didn't ask for you. I asked for that sick bitch.
I'm Beth and I'm a chic ghost.
Right on, right on. Okay, up top. The first thing I want to say is I want to acknowledge and apologize for the weird audio glitches in the last episode. We have a new computer here at the Dirt Dog House, and I recently changed around our recording setup, so we're still trying to work out some bugs. Hopefully it doesn't happen this time, otherwise I'm going to smash all of this shit into a million fucking pieces. Anyone else got anything they want to talk about?
About that, I just want to say it's not us, it's your AirPods, and you need to get new ones.
I don't have AirPods.
I'm saying whoever's listening.
Oh, right.
As you're listening, it's your device. I saw some good movies this
week. Hell yeah.
I saw The People's Joker, which was fucking incredible. Bear Drew, trans woman filmmaker, just made this incredible mashup of like comic book comedy and transition stuff. I'm looking for a word. A mashup of, I don't know. It's so fucking cool. It's like mixed media. It's live action. It's some animation, which I sometimes struggle with, but this, it was great. Everyone should watch it. It is, you know, it got kind of shut down by the man for a while, but I think you can stream it now.
You told me it was a trans allegory. Is that the word you were looking for?
Allegory is a good word, but I was thinking more of how it was like a mashup of these three, just like deep knowledge about comic book lore, the world of comedy, and the experience of someone transitioning. You're going to have to edit everything I said into like 30 seconds because that was a ramble. We also saw the Pavement documentary, Pavements, which was also a different, it had a different spin on a music documentary, which was pretty cool. That's not a horror movie.
Love Pavement.
Do you?
Nope.
Okay.
I watched 28 Years Later.
Woo!
And I did enjoy it. I don't want to spoil it for anyone who's going to see it, but it went unexpected ways. It got unexpectedly emotional, and it was really good. Great cast. Everyone did amazing. And overall, really good zombie movie.
I want to see it, but I want to rewatch the first
two. We were going to do that last weekend. We didn't get around to it.
No, we were out in nature.
Damnation. Okay, well, we have a movie that we're reviewing tonight, as we always do. What are we reviewing tonight?
Oh, my God. Okay. We're reviewing Hex.
Hex.
From 1980s.
That's important.
From 1980, I said 80s. I meant from 1980. Excuse me. I'm excited.
Singular.
Mm-hmm. And straight from Hong Kong.
Yes. And it's important to note that there are a lot of other movies called Hex. I've discovered recently that there are a lot of horror movies with the same name. I recommended a movie called The Invitation to my friend Pete, and he watched a different movie called The Invitation. So if you're looking for the movie Hex, make sure that it's the movie Hex from 1980 and not some other year and not from some other country that isn't Hong Kong, which is its own country.
It's true. It's true.
Okay, here's some details. As we noted, released in 1980, this was directed by Kuei Chi Hung, who also directed Boxer's Omen and Corpse Mania, which are two movies that we have watched and enjoyed, and I think they're great. This was written by Kuei Chi Hung also, and Tan Chin Hua. This is starring Ni Tian as Madame Chan Sao Ying, Young Wang as Young Chun Yu, and we have Chen Shuqia as Liang Kewa. I am trying my best to get these names right because, you know, I don't want to butcher them, but I think I got it right. The cinematography was Hsin Ye Lee and music composer by good old Eddie Wang. And I just have to say, and I'm not going to make fun of any names, but like, why is there not a rapper named Young Wang?
I bet there is, though. I bet he just hasn't, or she hasn't made it.
Could be, yeah.
He or she.
Or they.
Good yeah. job, Mom.
She or they. Why are you bases. Not doing a rap career under the name Young Wang?
Yeah.
Where can you watch this piss bucket? It's on Prime Video, Apple TV, YouTube, Google Play, all for rent, or it's hanging out for free on the Internet Archive. That's a thing that's still around, and you can find movies on it.
But only so, in Cantonese. Oh, there's no subtitles.
No subtitles?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, shit. Okay, that's a good note. I would have led people astray if they tried to get it for free on there.
I tried to, and that's what happened.
Okay.
Fuck all. Okay. What's this thing about?
Okay, so I want to start by elaborating a little bit more on the main three characters, because that kind of sets up the first 10 minutes of, like, basic plot. So we have Madame Chan Xiaoying, and she's like, I'm going to call her the main protagonist.
Definitely.
Apparently, across, like, different articles describing this, they've not named her that, but in my opinion, she will never do anything wrong.
She's the only person that's
she's
not
the only one I care about.
Yeah, shit sack.
And so she's sick. She has consumption or tuberculosis, and she's part of the Chan family, which is like this very prominent, historically prominent family in this area. They also ran the salt business, apparently. Like, back in the day, they were big salt producers, and that's how they, like, made their fortune. And they all have been, like, various prominent people throughout history, like officials, merchants, just important community members. But now we're kind of like thrust into the fall of the Chan family, because we only have, as established by the narrator in the beginning, one remaining daughter left, and she's been married to this man named Yung, and they've fallen into poverty. The family's fallen into poverty. They live in this mansion. It's pretty decrepit now.
Is it?
I mean, it's like, it's tight. Not, but there's
it looks
a lot of fog.
Sweet to me.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff right. that it, kind of like, it looks dope. Like, they have a lot of cool stained glass. There's a lot of cool wood accentuations. I don't know. It looks great. The furniture looks awesome. Mm-hmm. The mansion is definitely like a highlight in terms of like set design.
I have stuff to say about this, but we can save it for later, I think.
Regardless, they can't get a divorce. This also, I guess, was influenced by the feudal system of the time. Also, this is set roughly in about 1910. At the beginning, the narrator also says it's the 18th year of the Lunar New Year, which is the year of the dog. And that was also, it was the year of the dog in 1910.
Somebody did their research.
I know, guys. I really tried.
Somebody Googled it.
I might be a dog.
Because I was like, what is that?
What?
I might be a dog or a rat.
You're
I can't remember.
You know what I am. I'm a fucking sheep.
I'm a goat.
Goat. I'm a sheep.
That's not bad. That's chill. But anyway, it's frowned upon big time to get a divorce during this particular period, which across the board, getting divorced was not very socially acceptable until, like, I don't know, like 30 years ago. It's not something people
it's
really...
It's still not. In a lot of places, women
exactly.
still can't. Yeah.
Like, it's not great, okay? But enough about that. More about Young, who is the husband of Madame Chan. He sucks. I want to clarify that. I wrote in my notes... He's married into the family and hasn't stopped whining and bitching ever since. He's an alcoholic, abusive, ugly troll who resents his lower status and takes it out on his sick wife and also the few remaining staff that even stay at this mansion because they don't have any money. So whoever stays there is just loyal and doing it out of the goodness of their heart, which does not last long, I'll tell you what. And he's also very resentful of the fact that there is no money and he can't escape the situation. And then we also have Leung, who is introduced a little later, but she is a very important character in the story as well. But the beginning of the story just starts with Madame Chan getting like a checkup by this doctor who's like pretty optimistic about like her recovery from whatever conditions she's struggling with, consumption. And quickly we're introduced to just how terrible Young can be because he beats the shit out of a maid for dropping something. I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Yeah, it's like the red beans or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, she like dropped something and he was also really mad because the doctor called him Mr. Chang or Chan.
Oh, right.
And that made him be like, that's not my name. You know, my name is Young. You should call me that. So we just know immediately from like the dynamics of this relationship, Young is just a resentful piece of shit who drinks because he hates the fact that he's of a lower status and he wants more. And he also thinks for some reason his wife is faking being sick. I don't know why he thinks that, but he's convinced himself. And then two really quick, actually three quick plot establishments that are important. There's a like a bog or a pond right by the mansion.
Mm-hmm. I think they say it's a pond, but it looks more like a bog. But
it's like a bog.
There's a lot of fog and like it's kind of swampy. It's very small too, but we quickly are introduced to that. It's right by the mansion, and there's like this grandpa and his, you know, grandson like fishing in it. And we find out that people have drowned in this pond before, and that's important. Keep that in the back of your mind. This pond will come back. There is also a merchant who comes by the mansion. I think
every DoorDasher.
Yeah, essentially.
We're calling him the DoorDasher.
He comes like, I don't know, like once a month or a week or something. And he sells Madame Chan smokes, like medicinal herbs. And he also has a partial denture, which you might not think is relevant, but it actually is. And then I will also mention a jade bracelet, because this jade bracelet is at the center of most of the conflicts at the beginning of the story.
Good point.
A lot of fights occur because of the jade bracelet. Anyway, now Leung is introduced. She's introduced as the daughter of a madame who took care of like the Chan family during her time. And she served, I believe, Madame Chan's mother. That's like what I think happened. And before she passed away, she asked her daughter, Leon, to, like, go and give her thanks to this family and just, you know, thank them again for everything they've done. And Leon suggests, too, that she can stay and help Madame Chang, like, recover. So they become, like, fast friends. Or do they? Because Leon kind of, you know, has some interesting methods for taking care of Madame Chan, and then also has her own motivations that are later revealed, okay? She has her own motivations going on. And once she, Leon, joins the household and becomes a servant, this is when shit really hits the fan, and this is when, like, I would say the story actually starts. Now we've established all of the three characters, what their roles are. What's really going on? Well, I'll tell you what's going on. I'll tell you right now. This makes Young even worse somehow. He's even more of a dick. I don't know if it's just exacerbated by the fact that there's another woman in this house. I do know why, but again, all will be explained. And he gets way drunker and way more abusive. There's like this moment where he gets really drunk and he almost falls in the pond and is rescued by the same grandpa and grandson and carried back to the house. And then he's introduced to Leon and immediately like beats the shit out of Madame Chan and then like I think slaps Leon. But that there's like already a conflict even in the introduction of Leon. But things just start getting worse the longer Leung stays. And it eventually culminates in a particularly bad beating by Young. He beats Mrs. Chan. And Leung tells him, you know, you hit women, so you're not a man.
Yeah, you bully women. You're not a man.
She basically calls him a pussy, which he is. And that makes Young really, really mad. And he says he'll show her that he's a man. So Leung is unfortunately assaulted and beaten extremely badly. She's like kicked. It's a terrible scene. Mrs. Chan's like knocked out unconscious. And when she wakes up, she's in bed and Leung's just like at the foot of her bed crying. I guess Young had gone out drinking right after he did that. Really like not even batting an eye. This guy is like, okay, did my big one. I beat the shit out of those two women.
Did my big one.
I'm gonna go celebrate by getting really drunk again.
That's what I do when I do my big one.
But I don't know what to say. Like that's what I get from him. That's what I feel like he felt in that moment. He was very proud of himself. Okay.
He's like a kind of like a he has a wife, but he's like an incel. He's got incel vibes, but he has a wife.
Just, again, I think also it's like really emphasized because of the time period. It's just
sure.
It's 1910. The dynamic between men and women. Having a wife who of a higher status is like a big shame to you. And that really made him mad.
Why did he do it then?
He chose to do this. I don't know why he acts like someone forced him to. And then I wrote, tensions reach a new extreme point, and now there's no turning back. When Young returns from drinking, Leung and Madame Chan, they drown him. They drown his ass.
In a rain barrel.
In a rain barrel. Leung like pushes, well, she gets chased by him for some reason. I don't know. He gets mad at her again because she's still there, I suppose.
Yeah, he tells her that she should have left. And it's like this crazy rainstorm.
And it's like this huge rainstorm and Leung's chased by Yoon into the like courtyard or whatever. And it's because of the jade bracelet. She's holding the jade bracelet and she throws it in the rain barrel and he dives to get it because it's worth a lot of money. And that's when she throws the lid on him and her and Madame Chan hold the lid down and kill him. And everything after that is also just as bad because now we've got a dead man. And also, we've got a wife who's going insane now because of this said dead man, because this dead man is haunting her. Madame Chan is being haunted by the ghost of her husband, and she keeps having these horrific visions of him being discovered in the pond. Because also, like, you know, Leung and Madame Chan, for some reason, were like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to wrap him in a blanket and throw him in the pond, and we're just going to leave him there. Which I thought about this multiple times. We already established he's fallen in that pond before. And mom said this too. Just say he drowned, but whatever.
Yeah. I know. Why wrap him in a blanket? Yeah. He could have just fucking fallen in there.
He drowned.
Fuck around with the blanket.
And it would have made sense. It would have made so much sense, but whatever. They're not thinking clearly. So they do that. And this causes Madame Chan to like have a breakdown. She starts dreaming about her husband. The ghost of her husband is haunting her. It's made only worse by the fact that the village or the townsfolk smell this horrible smell from the pond and decide to drain it. And they don't find anything except for a pig carcass. So that basically convinces Madame Chan that like, yep, my husband's a ghost. He walked out of the pond and he's coming back for revenge. And he does just that. He scares the shit out of her and he ends up scaring Madame Chan to death. Shit. And this all happens in the first 40 minutes of the fucking film.
I know.
So you're like, what is the rest of this movie? Mm-hmm. And that's when we get our first big plot twist, which is that Young never died at all. And him and Leung conspired against Madame Chan to kill her, to scare her to death so that they could have all of her jewels and sell them. I'm not kidding. They are like really excited about the jewelry. They're going to sell it. They're going to get married. They're going to have the life they always deserved. But things don't go as planned for them because now they have a real ghost on their hands. Because Madame Chan is not very fucking happy that she got murked. Not one bit. Yeah.
For sure.
The end.
Wow. That was a roller coaster with like an abrupt, we fell off the cliff.
There's a lot more going on.
Other stuff happens and we'll get into it. Yeah, but that's a good setup.
I didn't want to like go and do all of it because I already did a lot.
Well, yeah, the second half gets a little bit wonky, I guess.
And there is a second twist, which we're not going to reveal.
That's why I did the first one, because the first one just sets up the second half of the film, which has to do with like the real ghost
haunting and possession kind of feel, which that we should talk about, but we can.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so great recap. We've never reviewed a horror film from Hong Kong before, so let's establish a bit of context, shall we? Yep. So, this was a Shaw Brothers film, and if you're not a big kung fu person or a big fan of films from Hong Kong, you might have not heard of it, but if you are, you probably have heard of the Shaw Brothers studio. This was a huge production company, probably the largest, I believe, that was in operation between 1925 and 2011. And the studio was responsible for a lot of the classic kung fu films, which if you happen to look through the list of these films, you might get confused and think you're just reading through a list of Wu-Tang Clan songs. Like literally, they got all of them. They got the 36 Chambers, they got the Shaolin Monks, they got the Golden Arms. All the references came out of the Shaw Brothers. And Tom, I know you probably know Shaw Brothers. Fuck you. But the Shaw Brothers also produced a lot of whacked out horror and exploitation films, including, as we mentioned, The Boxer's Omen and Corpse Mania, which are two that we saw. I found a list on MovieWeb. This is subjective, obviously, but this was the 10 best Shaw Brothers horror films, according to them. Corpse Mania, Black Magic, The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, which I'm assuming is better than The Legend of the Seven Golden Showers, Bewitched, Hex, The Oily Maniac, which
the Oily Maniac.
I have to see The Oily Maniac
now. For sure. I'm
that's
here.
Like on my priority list.
I'm in the room.
Mando.
We have Seating of a Ghost, which I have seen, but I don't remember much about it. Hell Has No Bounty, Human Lanterns, and at number one, The Boxer's Omen, which is amazing. If you like Big Trouble in Little China, seek out The Boxer's Omen because this is where it all started. Okay. So here's a little bit about Hong Kong horror. I'm not well versed in the classic horror films that came out of Hong Kong. As I noted, I have seen some and I know of some others, but I wanted to highlight a few elements of Hong Kong horror films. But first, here's something interesting to note. Mainland China actually put a ban on films depicting ghosts or supernatural phenomena, because it was a government stance against promoting cults or superstitions.
Oh, so, and probably like old religion too. Mm-hmm. Because
so yeah, if you want some spooky ghost shit, you got to get it from Hong Kong. Huh. So there's a lot of supernatural action in Hong Kong horror films, including ghosts, hauntings, possession, and stories inspired by folklore and belief systems like Buddhism, Taoism, etc. There's often a lot of genre mashups, including the incorporation of comedy, kung fu, and exploitation cinema. And these films often use atmospheric tension and gothic elements and employ variously colored bodily fluids.
Oh, so we had that in this one.
Yeah, I feel like we saw a bit of a lot of that stuff in this film. And the final thing I want to note is I wanted to talk about Category 3 films. Have you ever heard of a Category 3 film?
No.
No.
So basically, what a Category 3 film is, it was Hong Kong's version of an X-rated film.
Oh, okay.
And the rating system appeared in 1988, 1 year after the notorious Video Nasty List was established in the UK. But the main difference is that, from my perspective, it seems like Cat 3 films were actually an attraction in Hong Kong. And they made up 38% to 48% of the theatrically released films between 1988 and 1999. And some of the infamous examples are The Untold Story and The Ebola Syndrome, which have been on my list forever and I haven't seen them yet. But yeah, those are two of the big, like, big nasty Cat 3 films. But people, these were marketed towards adults and they were an attraction.
That makes sense. Yeah. For stuff like that here where, yeah. It's like, come see the most trauma. Trauma.
So technically, Hex came out before the development of the Cat 3 rating. So I guess it was just rated whatever. I don't know what it was rated before 1988. But here's a quick quote that I thought was interesting from Fangoria. In the 1970s, the genre-bending work of Hong Kong filmmakers like Kuei Chi Hung, who directed this film, helped to establish some formula-ready precedents for the Category 3 movies' twin poles of gritty social realism, as Kwai put it, and gimmicks-driven fantasies. So I think that's kind of an interesting pivot, because I think we saw a little bit of both of those in this film.
Yeah, it's definitely more fantastical, I feel like. But yeah. I guess it's listed social, as a fantasy, I mean, too. There is, like, you know, domestic violence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're kind of dealing with a pre-Category 3 movie here, but it sounds like it was kind of the precursor for what was to come. But yeah, I just wanted to do a little context setting just because, you know, there's a lot of history and a lot of interesting aspects of Hong Kong horror cinema, and we've never covered it before. Let's talk about Les Diaboliques.
Can I quickly, did we not watch Corpse Mania for the, did we just watch it?
Watched it in October.
Okay.
Just for the hell of it.
It
was fun. It was kind of like a giallo.
Now that I know the director of this is the same, I think it might be the same fucking set.
Could be.
Because that was a movie where I was all on and on about interior courtyards, and I was like, maybe that's just a feature of wealthy homes in Hong Kong, and maybe it is. But I mean,
well, I mean, this movie was set on a soundstage, and this was a huge production company, so I'm assuming they had like big sort of like Paramount.
I'm just curious. I'm gonna look into that.
Sized stages and
the look of the house was very, very similar.
Mm-hmm. Possible.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to derail us, but that's something. Oh. I'm here for the aesthetic conversation.
I like the aesthetics too.
Yeah.
So, have you seen Le Diabolique.
I'll admit that I've seen the 1996 remake with Sharon Stone and Isabella Gianni.
I have not.
I guess we're bad movie nerds.
I mean, I knew it was a remake and I felt bad that that's the first one, but I think I saw it in high school and things weren't so accessible then.
Yes. So, Les Diaboliques is a 1955 French psychological horror thriller about, wait for it, a woman and her husband's mistress drown the husband in a bathtub and dump his body in the river, only for the body to go missing, and then the husband's body reappears in the same bathtub and reanimates, causing the wife to suffer a fatal heart attack. And that's about all I know about it because I never watched the motherfucker, but that sounds a bit familiar, don't it?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Yes. Okay. So it's no secret that this film, Hex, the first half is basically a retelling of Les Diaboliques. So I have two questions. The first is a bit specific, and the second one is more general. What did y'all think of the first half of this film that was basically that retelling of the Les Diaboliques story? And the second question is, what is this movie? Is it a revenge story, a ghost story, a gross-out thing? And we can tackle that and get into all sorts of details when we get to that one.
I mean, some of this is for thoughts and feelings, but it's kind of a mess. And it's mostly, and this pertains to this whole thing, is this idea. So you get the beginning thing where the wife, Madame Chan, is the sympathetic character. And then the mistress comes and pretends to be her servant and helps her. Mm-hmm. And together they fight. The husband is fucking vile.
No, he's really bad.
And it seems, I mean, and he appears to beat the woman who later is revealed to be his mistress. And I'm like, how does this actually make any sense?
It's kind of, that is a good point to bring up. And I forgot to like say that. But it is like in the beginning of the film, he's hamming it up and making it more extreme, I feel like. Because also, right, in the second part of the film, he does not act that way. Like,
that's true. He dials it back. He
doesn't act like that towards this mistress. He's,
I guess,
not,
that's
like,
true. He's still a
her.
Piece of shit, but he's not so like slap happy.
No, he doesn't like slap her. He doesn't do anything. He's just like, there, go to bed.
But it's just so weird. And the thing that I know all of us read about the idea that he is the villain, and then after the twist, when the actual ghost is Madame and not him, he's sort of supposed to be like the protagonist.
But I like disagree with that point, because I don't think like I thought at any point he was the protagonist,
but who
or that
is
I was
then?
Rooting. It's her still. It's
you're
just
still
she's
rooting,
a ghost.
You're rooting for the ghost. Because I mean, we all were definitely rooting for the ghost.
Because yep. It's also like, that's, I would say, if you want to like define this crazy movie in one word, I mean, it is about revenge. It's a revenge
yes, definitely.
Story. And like the second half is trying, you know, to see that through. Like you want to see these two evil people get their asses handed to them by a ghost with a fucking cleaver. You want it so bad.
You do.
You need do. It. And I would say, to answer Cody's question about the first part of the film, I think the first part of the film is really good. I think at least in the sense of it makes sense. It's clear. I think it's like,
it's pretty.
It looks good. It looks really cool. Whereas the second half of the film has some awesome things going on. We got a lot of cool ghost action, but it's a lot more nonsensical. It's leaning into like the fantasy aspect of it and not really relying on like the plot making sense. It's more like there's a ghost now and she has a cleaver. The end.
Yeah. And the second half is so wild.
It is.
I don't want to jump the shark or whatever, because we are going to talk about the end without spoiling the end in terms of like Buddhist ritual thing that.
Yeah, I'll get to that.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, this really is a tale of two halves, where the start of it is a pretty clear, straightforward retelling of Les Diaboliques, and then it turns into like a completely whacked out ghost story where the ghost might be a vampire.
You know?
There's some like Evil Dead gross out
yes,
shit.
Yes, and comedy is something we're going to talk about, but that's part of that where it's like, Yeah, there's some evil. There's like a hand.
Yeah.
That's still chopped off hand.
I was just
still
thinking about that because that doesn't make sense in lieu of other things.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I was thinking that too. That's a kind of a plot hole, but I guess you just don't have to worry about it.
It's fine.
It works itself out.
Yeah. Also, yeah, there's like a scene where the husband beats his wife's corpse and is just like spewing green fluid.
That's what you're saying
about
the...
What is the green fluid?
What's happening?
And it's not just green. It's like mint green.
Neon.
It's like what was that? You can't do that on television. You know where people got slimed. You're too young for this.
No, slimed like the Nickelodeon.
But this
thing?
Early slime on that show was like cottage cheese that was mint green, and that is what this is like. And it like explodes out of her body.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it gets really crazy. I mean, there's tonally, it's all over the place. You have like these moments where it's spooky, jump scares, and then it kind of brings in the comedy, but it's still kind of like following this revenge plot line. It gets really crazy. And I don't know, I think it's kind of fun. You know, there's a skull barf.
Blood barf, right?
Yeah,
skull,
it's like
blood
a
barf.
Skull blood barf. Yeah, so like the second half of this movie is full of like wild stuff, which is, I gotta say, fun for sure. But I want to talk about the comedy elements because there's all sorts of like funny comedy throughout this. And some of it is clearly purposeful, but some of it I'm not so sure about whether it was purposeful or not, or if we just thought it was funny. But so we have to talk about the guys that come to move Madame Chan's furniture after she dies. And these guys are clearly there just to be funny. It's kind of like some Three Stooges ass shit, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it is. And also they're going to burn her furniture, which is so weird. It's like all this beautiful furniture and they're like, boop, boop, like running into each other, burning furniture. And they see her ghost.
Yeah, one of them sees her ghost and she's like, I'm the lady of this house. Why are you moving my furniture? And then when he alerts Jung and his mistress, like, hey, the madam of the house is here. She's not there anymore. And he pisses himself.
We can't forget to mention the massive piss.
A bucket just got dumped out into his.
It's not a trickle either.
It just like all comes blasting.
It's like his water broke.
It's literally like his water broke, but like in like a movie way. Like it's
like it's supposed to be funny. Like, oh, and he pissed.
But it's weird because it's like one little tiny piss and then suddenly.
Yeah,
there's that, but even before everywhere. Those guys, the merchant guy, the DoorDash guy.
Yeah, he's kind of
funny.
He's
funny too.
He's got
that, but also he comes and he's all like, duh, 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 I'm here, you know, and like kind of shuffling around. I mean, like he's definitely a comedic element too. Yeah, there's just some of the ways people fall and some of the ways the hauntings play out that people in the like, it's not a cemetery exactly. Where Madame Chan's body is
like resting because they
like drop the coffin.
Mm-hmm. No, they don't drop the coffin. The coffin falls off of its like,
yeah, but they're fucking thing. It's like they're kind of,
well, then they scream and run away because they're like, oh my God, it's the ghost.
Yeah. And I thought some of the like horror elements that were kind of jump scares and stuff were kind of funny just because I think maybe they were dated or whatever. But, you know, I don't think they were necessarily supposed to be funny, but from our perspective, they came across as
comical. I don't think that the blood barf skull was supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
But it was.
It was.
The pee was supposed to be funny, though.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was the thing that got confusing is once they introduced the slapstick comedy, it was like, what are we supposed to be laughing at? Because, like, is the scary stuff also supposed to be funny? Or is it like, we just didn't have the means to pull this off in like a really terrifying way. I don't know. But it was interesting. I mean, what did you think about the comic element of this? Was it a benefit to the movie or was it a distraction?
Yeah, I think I would have been bored. Without
the comedy?
Well, not. I just think it gave it like a little like light heart. I mean, it like
gave it grace.
Yeah, or, you know, yeah. I'm not going to say that it, I was about to say it made it clear it didn't take itself too seriously.
That's what I think, yeah.
But it did at some parts, though.
Yeah,
right?
True.
But it did, it was, don't you think so? Buggy, you look like, no, you don't think so.
Well, I think, like, I don't necessarily think this movie was set out to be, like, a serious terrifying horror movie.
But I think it was supposed to be scary.
I think it's supposed to be scary, but it's also supposed to combine like action and also a little bit of comedy. Like, I don't think like, right. you know, like the people who made this film were like, this is a serious movie
right.
that will only scare people. I think they were like, this is going to be a fun movie that has a lot of cool, scary, fun stuff in it.
Right, it's like a kitchen sink.
Yeah, I don't think
it
it's
does,
like...
That's a good way to put it. It does kind of feel like that once it really starts to ramp up.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, here's this and here... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think they're like, this is gonna be...
And so, yeah, I guess overall, I think
it helps.
It helps.
Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, let's talk about the twist. So we talked about one of them, which is the one that's not a surprise, because if you know anything about Les Diaboliques, then you know what they were trying to do with the first half. But then... You know, there were at least one other twist, maybe two along the way, and we don't have to give them away, but did they work? Were they surprising? Did you think that they impacted the film in a positive way?
I liked the final twist. Like, I just thought it was fun. It's also what made me be like, oh, this movie's just fun. Like, it's a fun, silly movie. It was very telenovela of them. That's all I'll say. That's really how I felt. I was like, wow, this is funny.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the twist made sense. As we kind of established, there were enough plot holes where it would be kind of confusing if those things were both true. I don't really know. So I think in some ways it works in its favor, just makes it more entertaining. But in other ways, it kind of like is a detriment because it doesn't make any sense. At all.
Yeah, I didn't really think any of the twists made sense, but they were fun.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the first twist I thought was effective, which they just pulled from a classic movie. I thought the main twist at the end really kind of like made you question some of the things you saw earlier in the film. You know, we talked about the severed hand moving around, which was like based on the twist...
Doesn't make any
How
sense.
How is that even possible?
And her severed head. Her severed head, yeah. too.
I mean, yeah, ghost. There's some things that go unexplained once you know what the final twist is. Right. So.
And it was like definitely in the last 10 minutes and maybe even in the last 5 minutes of the movie. So it was just kind of like, da da da, here goes the movie. Oh, wait, and, which was super fun, but it was also like, oh,
what?
Okay.
Yeah. You're kind of just like, oh, interesting. Okay.
But for those that are interested and want to pay attention, apparently there is a reference early in the film in the dialogue that gives you a clue about what's going to happen at the end. So just kind of pay attention if you're like keying in on the dialogue, if you're clocking it, you know.
Oh, here it is. It'd be interesting to rewatch it knowing what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And see if it made it a different viewing experience.
I was rewatching it today, and I will say, like, after knowing like what's gonna go down, there is definitely like enough context where they're trying to lead you to like these certain
right.
points.
It's just maybe so wild. And also I think sometimes when something is subtitled, it's easier to miss little things because you're reading. Even if you're reading it in a very like, I feel like after the first few minutes of a movie with subtitles, unless they're not done well, I forget that I'm reading, but you are still reading.
Yeah.
So your brain is like maybe not as nimble and able to like pick up on extra right. stuff if you're like,
yeah,
you know,
I was
I'm
trying
watching
to,
and I'm reading.
I was trying to take notes and then I feel like I was missing dialogue.
Because you're reading.
Which
yeah.
Which I do a lot when we watch foreign films with subtitles.
Or you miss actual like events because you're yeah. reading and you're taking like if you're taking notes for and sure. reading things like happen on the corner of the screen where you're like you missed
yeah.
that yeah
I will give them their flowers and say like they did put a lot more like thought into their like goals and their like plot twist than I like originally
yeah
anticipated like rewatching I was like they really did like establish a clear narrative like clear as possible to clarify like the movie's still insane but
yeah
they like they knew what they were gonna do
which speaking yeah. of that and Les Diaboliques and you know I know that that was based on a novel and this movie definitely feels like a Victorian novel like mm-hmm. I was thinking like
it feels like V.C. Andrews
it feels like Wilkie Collins to me which neither of you guys have read the no. Woman in White or the Moonstone but or you know some Charles Dickens is this way too where there's like this whole setup and then, you know. Okay.
So I guess the verdict's kind of out on the twists. They kind of worked. Some of them maybe were a little bit, I don't know, what's the word?
Silly?
After the fact.
Sloppy.
The thing about it is it wouldn't have been anything without the twist.
Yeah. I mean, the twist did kind of make it. They were sort of crowd pleasers, I guess, maybe. I mean, made you want to grab your popcorn, I suppose.
And I just think, again, in retrospect, like rewatching part of the film, they put more thought into the twist than like I, like first time viewing
thought. Right, when you see the like Easter egg, well not Easter egg, what's the other, you know, foreshadowing.
Yeah, they like do an amount of that where it's like, this was like the intended way it was supposed to go.
Okay, the last thing I want to talk about really is something you didn't cover in your recap, which is this crazy naked exorcism scene that happens near the end of the film. And I want to talk about this because what the hell, like, this thing goes on for like, what do you think, at least 5 minutes?
Maybe 10.
Maybe 10.
No, it's 5 minutes. It's 5 minutes.
Yeah, and I think this doesn't give away anything about the final twist. The
mistress?
The mistress hires
a shaman.
Yeah, and it's like a Buddhist ceremony thing, which is kind of funny because it's like, you'll enter hell, but because it's Buddhism, hell is like loving and kind. Well, and but the exorcism is not.
They're like, they're going to summon hell.
Yes, they're going to summon hell.
The ghost to hell and banish them to hell for eternity.
And yeah, it's super long. It's super like, there's boobs in motion a
big
lot.
Big boobs.
Yeah.
Big boobs, great, like perfect body, big
like
boobs.
Amazing bod.
Yeah, and with writing, and so it's the second movie in a row with like naked body paint scene drawn out longer than it needs to be.
Yeah,
I like this one more than the other one though. That one just pissed me off.
It was wild.
It was.
Because there was really no nudity up to that point either, and then it was suddenly.
Yeah, it was sudden.
Full. It was full nudity.
Yeah, and I saw one review that posited that if the scene had better lighting, it would have left nothing to the imagination, if you know what I mean.
Like, including anus.
Yeah, you could probably see just about everything if the lighting was a little bit better. But there was also some really cool sort of cinematic lighting with, there was like a stained glass window with lighting coming through that was casting sort of like rainbow colors across the whole scene.
It was very psychedelic.
Yeah, it was very cool looking, but it was also like, why is this going on for so long? And also I was like, wait a minute, is this like an S&M porn now?
There was a lot of hitting.
I was wondering too, like, is this like when boobs became legal to like film that much
suddenly,
or something? Like,
yeah.
So they were like, let's put as much tit in here as we can.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so much slapping.
Yeah. Also, there was some like spitting blood on tits.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of blood spitting upon tits.
I did write in my notes, blood, tit, spit, or something.
Yeah. Because that does happen.
It was spit, wild. Tit, so, tit, if that's spit. Your kind of thing and you're watching this and you're like, I'm not really feeling the vibe, stick around for the tits and the blood splitting? The blood spitting on the tits and, you know, all of the bush and the writhing around and the S&M and all of that.
And the body paint looks styly, too.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. But it's a wild thing to kind of tack on to the end of a movie that kind of went from sort of straightforward to a little bit of a wacky ghost story to all of a sudden being like, this is borderline porn exploitation sort of vibe.
It feels like it's from a totally different era.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Totally. It does. Yeah. It almost felt like it should have been in a different movie all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like a modern movie or something. But
then you think it's, you know, The Boxer's Omen is pretty fucking wild.
Yeah, that is true.
Like in terms of mood shifts.
That movie is crazy. It's awesome though.
It is.
Yeah. It's great. Here's a couple of random notes, or one random note. This film was followed up by two unrelated comic horror sequels, Hex versus Witchcraft, also in 1980, and Hex After Hex in 1982. So yeah, they kind of, you know, they do the same thing they do in this country where they have an initial movie and then they just start tacking on sequels, you know, regardless of whether they have any relation to the original storyline.
And it sounds like they leaned into the comedy.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Okay, let's do a quick obscurity rating on this thing. We got 695 IMDb votes. And I do have to note, we're on a streak of four movies under 1,000 IMDb votes lately. That's kind of fun. IMDb critics, 15. Not only does this have zero Rotten Tomatoes reviews, but it doesn't even come up on there as a movie that's filed in their reviewing database. So that tells you a little bit of something. And then this is available on five places, including the Internet Archive, which has no subtitles, so that kind of doesn't really count. I will note, you can find Blu-rays and DVDs of this, but they're really hard to find. They're really expensive, and they're not in a DVD or Blu-ray code that you can watch on a standard player. So it's almost like they don't exist. But if you have a region-free player and you really wanted to track down a Blu-ray, you could get it, but it's going to be hard and it's going to be expensive. So all in all, on our obscurity rating scale, it's a 7. Which is pretty good. It's higher than we've been lately. I feel like we've been hovering around the 5-6 at best for the last several. So this is a little more obscure than what we've been dealing with. Okay, do you guys want to do the thing that we do that scares the shit out of us and the piss out of us? And the poo-poo and the pee-pee?
I'm going to close my eyes.
Okay, we close our eyes. We do a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the count of three, whether or not we think this is a horror gem. And here we go. 3, 2, 1
Oh, shit.
Oh, man.
I'm a halfie, but I
was gonna do a thumbs up just because I thought you guys wanted to do thumbs down, but
okay, here
we'll reveal it. Yeah,
here's the reveal. We all thumbs down. I have to say that I was close. Like, part of me wanted to give a thumbs up to this just because I thought it was actually really fun. At the start, I didn't know if I was gonna be into it, but by the end, I was kind of feeling it. But also, I think there's a lot more films of this type from the Hong Kong horror cinema scene that are probably way better. And I think this one is pretty good, but, you know, maybe not anything that you need to, like, put on your priority list.
I agree completely.
Yeah, but you want to see the end.
Yeah, the end is
you want to see that, like, sexorcism.
There's a lot of cool ideas in this film that I genuinely enjoyed, but I agree with the sentiment of just there are like so many better movies that kind of like are in the same vein of like being wacky and doing insane and extreme things that are just like overall better films. So it kind of hurts my heart because I like the idea here. I liked the vision. And I liked also it's kind of opened up a new avenue of like a different type of movie. I'm definitely going to be looking into more because I liked this movie and I was like, I want to see more movies like this. It just wasn't one where I was like, I'm going to recommend this movie to people. Exactly. I don't know.
And it was, yeah, it was boring at part. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's just me. Like, it definitely was so uneven.
Yeah. I felt like tonality was crazy across the board. Like, for sometimes it felt sort of like a historic drama. Sometimes it was just completely whacked out.
It looked beautiful. The lighting was beautiful.
Yeah. Amazing looking.
Were you stoned? Who was stoned? I think maybe being stoned. Nobody was stoned.
I think being stoned helps.
I was about to say. Like, I think with the caveat that if you're stoned, this might be better.
It might be dope.
Yeah. I thought the set design and the lighting was really cool. The cinematography was cool. There was some like really interesting camera movements that almost felt like classic horror, classic ghost story, haunted house stuff. But it really was kind of like all over the place, which made it a little bit hard to lock into as a film, which part of that was the fun, but like also part of it was a little bit chaotic.
Yes.
I don't know. Anyways, so that's our verdict.
Sorry, I'm a halfie. I'll give it a half. I think it's
a partial
turd. It's probably three halfies.
Yeah, it's a partial turd.
It's a, you know, a soft one or whatever you called it last time.
Did I do that?
No, I don't remember.
Probably was you.
It sounds like me.
Somebody said something about a soft
Sorry, turd. Just some, know. Yeah.
Anyways, so one thing I did accidentally that I think is actually a good idea is instead of doing our thoughts and feelings before the vote, we do our vote and then we kind of talk about why.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We liked it or didn't like it, because it kind of like spoils our vote if we do our thoughts and feelings before it.
Does or, it, though?
Well, it kind of, I mean, it makes you a little guarded about what you're saying about it.
Oh, that's, yeah it spoils your thoughts and feelings more than it spoils your vote.
So it's kind of like, and this was completely by accident, I just didn't put it on my outline, but yeah, it kind of makes more sense to be like, okay, we're going to vote and then explain what our vote was, and that incorporates our thoughts and feelings about why or why not.
I like it. Look at us growing and changing and adapting.
Changing. Yeah.
Okay, well, we did our business. And now it's time for special time.
Special time.
Special time.
What do you have for special time tonight?
Okay. So this is kind of like a sweet and short one. It's not like me info dumping.
Sure it is.
It's. I'm going to try. Everyone's making fun of me because I'm like incapable.
She's not sweet or short.
No, yeah, it's true. Sweet. But anyway, I wanted to use my special time to talk about an avenue for horror that I really, really love. And that is horror games.
Oh, okay.
They're some of my favorite ways of scaring the shit out of myself.
Like video games or like card games?
Are there horror card games? Probably.
Probably.
But any avenue, mainly video games. But I think, I don't want to say underrated, because I feel like it's definitely like become more popular, especially like since Resident Evil games came out and like Silent Hill games have come out. It's gone more mainstream, but to me, it's underrated in the sense of I think it's one of the best like vehicles for horror, because it puts you in the position of having to make decisions. And recently, it got me really thinking about this because I've been playing the remastered Silent Hill 2, which in my opinion is the best horror game that's ever been made, because it is scary and it's not fun. It's hard and it's painful. And it's like you just have to force yourself to do it.
I love this game because it's not fun.
It's not fun. It's absolutely not. Like, I would lie. That'd be a bold-faced lie if I went, hey, Silent Hill 2, that's a really fun game. And for anyone for some reason that doesn't know, even though I'm pretty sure, like, most people do, Silent Hill 2 is just like, I mean, it's part of the Silent Hill universe, but it's its own unique thing. And it's about James. This character named Jane Sunderland, I think is his name. Why are you looking at me like that?
Thunderland?
I'm just thinking about short and sweet.
You're so rude. James Sunderland looking for his wife, Mary, in this like abandoned town in Maine. That's also something I think is interesting about Silent Hill games for the most part. They're set in Maine or New England.
Oh, like Stephen King.
Which is interesting, because that seems to be another place a lot of horror things are set in, is like Maine and New England.
And the Pacific Northwest.
It's true. It's like, it's very common, but it's about this man who is looking for his wife who had passed away 3 years earlier, but somehow sent him a letter to return to Silent Hill, a place he always promised to take her. And this game's really cool because it also explores films of like themes of grief and abuse and a lot of really interesting, unique ways. It's a really cool game, worth a shot if you can stand playing 50 hours of something that
will
just
not fun
make you miserable in the best way. It also has birthed the most iconic like antagonists ever, like Pyramid Head,
and this is where all the mannequins,
we know and we love him, the nurses.
Oh, the nurses, yeah, that's what
they're,
it is
super awesome. The also the music score from this I think is really amazing. Shout out to Akira Yamaoka, I think is how you say his last name. He made the best soundtrack for a scary game ever. Nice. And
just hands down?
I think so. Personally, objectively, I think so. And there's also a lot of cool indie horror games that I think are underrated, like Doki Doki Literature Club, amazing horror game, Fear and Hunger, lots of cool ones. I wanted to ask you guys too, like, do you have any like horror video games that you loved or like that had a prominent effect on your life or anything?
Well, I'm not a big video game guy, but I definitely played the first Resident Evil that I thought was pretty good. And I think maybe the original Wolfenstein, like on PC, counts because there was a lot of creepy stuff in there. But I think those are the only two that I feel really might fit into the horror category. But there was a game, I can't remember, it was either on Sega or maybe Nintendo or Super Nintendo, where it was like a haunted house game. Except it was so hard to even like get into the house that I feel like I never actually got into the haunted house. I was
Luigi's like, Mansion. No, I'm kidding.
No, that was not. Unfortunately, not that. But and I have no idea what it was called.
Luigi's Mangione.
There you go.
Yeah.
Perfect.
What's happening to him is a horror story.
Yeah, I know.
He did nothing but write.
Robin Hood.
That's true. But do you have anything, Mom?
I played Silent Hill 1 and 2 with your dad, I feel like. Or I just sat there and watched and got scared. Because it is scarier
it's
when
really
you're...
scary.
When you have to make choices, it's scarier.
It's hard. And again, like the remastered version, because originally Silent Hill 2 is a PS2 game, which I tried to play the original way too hard. The controls are insane.
Yeah, no, it's hard. It's too hard. Old games were so hard. Also, I mean, this is not a scary game, but, you know, there's just, like, so much charm to Castlevania, and it's given us a lot of, like, it's added a lot of stuff to the lexicon. Like, we often talk about things as being, like, Castlemania.
Yeah, I mean, I think that horror games
I'm in it for the words.
Are very underrated in the sense that I think they're some of the best, like, some of the best stories I've heard have come from games like that. I think that they give room because it's also like
it's like the parallel with horror movies. You get to push the envelope
and boundaries and explore like really complex subjects, and also because it's a different type of format than a movie where you only have like 2 hours, right? You have like, you know, a game you put like 80 hours into that has like a bunch of in-depth things, world building, and gets to explore like interesting plot points way more in depth.
I know this is because I'm old and I'm biased, but the idea of someone putting 80 hours into a video game just hurts my soul. And I know that for a lot of people, it's, I mean, what am I doing with those 80 hours? You know? Right.
I mean, I get it. It's also hard, especially when you're playing a game that's not fun.
Reminder, this game is not
fun. It's amazing. I think everyone should play it.
But it's not.
It's sort
fun.
Of like a shroom trip that goes bad, you know? It's like that. Goodness. It's like everyone should have it, but I wouldn't do it again.
I'm not, oh my goodness, and you, the dog is literally drawing every loud toy out of his toy.
But it was just, this was a quick one, because I didn't really, like, have a lot I wanted to say about it other than just I'm playing a game I really love. I feel like, again, a lot of horror games have come into mainstream, like random indie ones, like Mouthwashing 2, which is really cool. Just a bunch of random games like that, where it's like,
horrible.
What is this game? What is this about? And a lot of them end up being great, and I love them. It's nice. Like one of my favorite things to do is just watch random people on YouTube. Shout out Manly Badass Hero. That's my favorite video gamer ever. He'll break down weird games that like are random that you can't play anymore, or like flash games and stuff like that. And I really love it. It's very
Add
fun.
Add them to our socials or whatever.
Manly Badass Hero on YouTube.
There is there's one movie that's coming out, or maybe it's already out, that's based on a horror game. It's called
The Japanese one?
No, this is something different, I think.
Oh.
It's called Until Dawn. It's like a time loop
thing.
And I've never heard of the game, but I've been reading about the movie and it sounds interesting.
There's
to me,
another
so
one though that's
out.
Like something room something. Or wait, hold on.
There's
poop
that.
Room.
There's Poop Room that's coming out. No, but Until Dawn.
Pee Room.
Is one of these famous like choice games, you know, like choose your own adventure. They're like that, where each choice you make like affects the ending you're gonna get. It's like a butterfly effect thing.
I see.
And I think with the movie too, they might be doing like multiple different endings depending on like which version you see, which I think is really cool. But that's kind of an interesting like horror game to choose, considering like how much of the game is that the scary part is based off of having to make decisions like that and having to deal with the consequences of making the wrong one.
Well, I'm going to check out the movie. I'm not going to check out the game because
Exit 8 is what I'm talking about.
Oh, Never heard of that one.
Yeah.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Exit 8 getting a movie adaptation, and people are, it's buzzy.
Yeah.
Okay, buzzy.
I love that. Also, the Silent Hill movies are fun. I want to just say that really quick.
They're stupid, but they're fun.
Yeah, I've only seen the first one.
They're very fun. And
I've
liked
the first one too, actually.
They don't add, like, they're completely different than most of the Silent Hill stuff. It's really just the first Silent Hill movie game combined with the second one. But I love it, and it's weird, and it's got cool stuff in it.
Right on.
So
okay.
Watch that.
Horror games forever.
Love them.
Beth is up next. What's your movie?
I don't know, but I'll know soon.
Whoa, that laugh.
Wouldn't you like to know?
I like that laugh.
I would like to know.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, it's going to be a surprise, which is always fun. We like surprises. And this is the 28th episode, which means we didn't succumb to the 27th
club. We made it. Well, it
curse.
Hasn't. Yeah.
So
once
now
you
we
hear
have to
it.
Do this podcast forever. There's
forever.
Two choices in life. You either die at 27 or you go on forever and ever, ever in pain and tiredness and
beat that dead horse.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for tuning in, you pieces of shit. Have a good evening.
It's not
fun.
Bye,
guys.
It's not fun.
It's not.
No, she did her big one. Oh, damn it. Did I miss? Did she stop?
Dirt dogs on a gym hunt.